Each of us has a unique origin story, and it has created a thread in our lives. But sometimes we need a fairy godmother to unlock our potential. Therefore, tune in and discover how Pascali Bergmans can show you how to solve your greatest challenges through powerful storytelling and accept her invitation to be brave. Welcome to the Forged by Trust podcast. I'm your host, Robin Dreek, professional speaker, executive coach, former U.S. Marine, spy recruiter, best-selling author, and your trust and communication expert. Coming up next on the Forged by Trust podcast.
I want to invite people to just be more brave, because the worst thing that can happen is that you didn't do it. Do it and just try it. And even if it's just dipping your toe in the water, but invite yourself and allow yourself, right? It's allowing yourself to be that brave, to say, this is who I am, this is what I do, and this is what I'm here for.
Welcome to the show. I'm Robin Dreek, and on the Forged by Trust podcast, we decode the interpersonal communication skills of the world's most acclaimed forgers of trust. We unlock the skills and techniques from spies, spy recruiters, master interrogators, globally recognized behavioral experts, C-suite executives, entrepreneurs, acclaimed authors, and thought leaders. Each episode provides specific actions that you can immediately apply to any aspect of your personal or professional life. Today's episode, Threads of Bravery, is with my good friend, the fairy godmother for public speaking and storytelling, Pascali Bergmans. From the lead in London's production of Wicked, a life-threatening and changing illness, becoming a master storyteller for industry, Pascali defines bravery. During the episode today, we talk about origins of bravery through the threads in our lives, attentive talking, solving problems through powerful storytelling, and an invitation to be brave. Pascali, welcome to Forged by Trust.
Yay, thank you.
I love it. Yay. So we met a little bit of time ago, and I've had the amazing, fortunate pleasure of following you on social media and LinkedIn and the great, phenomenal content you put out there.
Oh, thank you.
And the most impressive thing that I can really see and observe in you is something, I don't know if you've been told this before, you probably have been because it's so evident to me, probably others, you have profound bravery.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. What I mean by that, I mean, you put out content that is brave and it's beautiful and it's wonderful, it's inspiring. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to the destination of impact storytelling by the end. But I'm curious, what was it when you were growing up that you think gave you that amazing bravery to be who you are today?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think it's a multitude of things, right? I saw my parents always doing their best to be the best version of themselves.
Okay, so now you already started. You can start me on it. Your parents doing the best.
Yes.
What did they do? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in the Netherlands, you know, small town Dutch girl, where everybody knew each other. And my parents, I just always saw them work incredibly hard to be the best version they could be in that given moment.
And what did they do?
So my dad is a physiotherapist, and he has built a magnificent company helping other people move, which is obviously fantastic. Oh, wow. And my mom, well, she started off, you know, being in musical theater. She used to play Tinkerbell in Peter Pan, which is an incredible story.
I want to hear it. Let's hear the story about her doing Tinkerbell.
Yeah. So she used to wear this like really lime green glittery costume, and she played Tinkerbell in this musical Peter Pan. And I remember we had career day or something in school.
How old were you?
I must have been 4 or 5 years old, very young, very young, too young to understand that this wasn't a real thing, right? She was play acting. Yeah, it was fantastic. And in school, they were sort of doing the rounds of, what do your mommy and daddy do? So I was like, oh, my dad's a physiotherapist and my mom is Tinkerbell. Instead of saying she's an actress,
I
said, now my mom plays, she's Tinkerbell. And I remember one boy, he was like, well, that's not possible because Tinkerbell isn't real. And I got so upset that I went home crying and I said, Mom, this kid in my class says that you're not real. And she just went, hold on. She went and got her costume, put herself in glitter and everything, got some fairy dust, went into school, literally went into the classroom and was like, all right, who said this? It was amazing. And this kid just went, fair play. She is Tinkerbell. I will shut up now. And I think it was that they were so convinced of whatever they did, that was what they were going to do with their whole heart and mind and body and spirit, that sort of just transferred over to me and my sister.
Yes, it did. And how old is your sister? Is she older, younger than you?
Younger. She's 2.5 years younger. She is a singer in the Netherlands, and she's just absolutely magnificent. Yeah.
How did your parents meet?
Good question. They live in, you know, my mom is from Bergen op Zoom, which is...
Okay, say that again.
Bergen op Zoom. Yeah, it's it's a Dutch place. It's an even smaller town than where my dad's from. And one night, her and her girlfriends decided to go and party in this town 15 minutes away. She has been brought up in a family that was very closed off from the world, I think you could say, very protected. There's nothing wrong with that, but... she wanted to be an actress from a young age, and she was told, right, well, that's not a real job. And don't you want to do something that's a bit, you know, it's going to get you money.
what do you think was her inspiration to want to be an actress at a young age?
I think, so she was bullied a lot. And I think it was an escapism, right? Because acting and telling other people's stories can be very powerful. And I think that for her was a way of expressing herself, because I don't think she got that at home necessarily.
Right. Right.
So I think this was her way of escaping that and being able to, you know, if she's angry, she could be angry through that character. Or if she was happy, she could be happy through that character, because right. she couldn't develop it at home in a safe way.
Wow. Okay. So I'm sorry. Yeah. Bring us back up how they met.
Yeah. So my mom decided to go partying, and she walked into this bar, and there my dad was, and they looked at each other, and well, the way my dad tells the story, he says that he went to the bathroom and he looked himself in the eye and was like, okay, you're done. Because my dad liked to party and he was a bit of a flirt. And he's like, this is it. This is the woman. But my mom happened to have a boyfriend at the time. So the next day, this guy goes to my mom's house like, oh, I'm going to take you out for a date. And she's like, no, I've met the love of my life and it isn't you. So she left him, and, you know, my parents got together. After 5 years, there was me. And 2 years later, there was my sister. And they are such an inspiration for me, not just in like career or, you know, work. It's more how they look at life and how they have such bravery, and they just do what they want to do. They've both been told many times, don't do that, it's a bad idea. Don't do that, it's going to be very hard. And they are the ones who go, I'm going to show you that I can do it. And I think, yeah, that totally went into me and my sister. It's in my genes. And they, yeah, they both just smashed it out of the park. They really have.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So here we are, your mom's Tinkerbell. Your dad's a physiotherapist. Is that how you say it?
Physiotherapist, yes.
How did he get into wanting to do that?
So he's always been into sports and stuff. He's always just, he was horse riding for a long time. He used to jump horses for really rich people. And he's, you know, he went into the army because he was, you know, this crazy kid who just needed an outlet. And he felt like the army was a good place for him. So he did. He did a really great job. But, you know, he wanted something else, and he wanted to help people. I think both my parents are always up for making someone else's life better, right? And just completely putting their lives aside, just going, no, I'm going to help you right now. So he, you know, he's got a knack for signs. He's good with words. And in order to do physiotherapy, you need to know a lot of words, because all the different bones and whatever and ligaments in the body have their own Latin name. So he did that degree and he started his own business. And wow. His grandfather was, I mean, he comes from a family of doctors and nurses. So yeah, so I think it's just, you know, in him. And his dad lent him the first, you know, bit of money to start his business. And funnily enough, my dad lent me my money to start my business. And yeah, he just got cracking. And within like no time, he sort of blew up. And he did really well. You know, it's 3 practices, and he's well renowned in the Netherlands for being the person that can help people who have been everywhere but to him. And he's definitely changed a lot of people's lives. Like, people who couldn't walk anymore can now walk. And he uses the mind as well as how the body works, because he, you know, he's like, this is interlinked with each other. Sure. So he doesn't just help people by massaging them. He talks to them and he goes, well, your problem isn't how you stand, how you walk. The problem is that you're keeping tension in your shoulders, for example. So if you don't let go of these things in life, you're going to have this pain forever, no matter how many massages you get, right? Yeah. So he's, yeah, I've learned a lot from him in that way.
It's a beautiful blend. What kind of things do you think he was doing that made him so successful with people?
I think he had a very clear vision and he knew where he wanted to end up. This is it. Like in a conversation, he knew where he wanted them at the end of the conversation. So he reverse engineered everything. So he went, if I want you to think like this by the end, I need to start up like this and I need to guide you through this journey so that we can get to this point. And I think he's always had that very clear. And, you know, some people might say that's manipulative, but it's just attentive talking, really. It's just attentive talking where you know where you need to go. So if you are taking the lead in a conversation or in a presentation, you need to be able to say, take my hand, I'll lead you there. So it's not a manipulative thing. It's a let me take care of you thing.
Right. What an impactful childhood, full with rich relationships.
Absolutely. I mean, lots of kids from my childhood will be able to remember the conversations in the kitchen. My mom used to cook a lot, which eventually led up to her being a chef after musical theater. Yeah. You know, for a while she was a stay-at-home mom and then she transitioned into being a chef. And we had all these kids coming over and we would just stand in the kitchen while she was cooking or my dad was, you know, cooking, and we were just all together and we would just sit on the work blade, you know, or just stand there and just talk about life. And I think those conversations in that moment, you're a teenager or you're a kid and you don't understand how powerful that is. But now that I'm older, I find I'm having those conversations in my kitchen with friends of mine. And it's so amazing that my parents got to change so many people's lives, their perspectives, their mindset, and they got to give all that love because we have so much to give.
Yeah.
So give it, right? There is so much inside of us. And I think we need to keep on giving because the more you give, the more you're, you know, you will have.
Yeah. I'm dumbfounded by that. It's, again, you keep using that word beautiful. What do you think it was that they were doing that inspired even your teenage friends to want to share with them and be part of their lives? That's unusual.
Yeah. This is something that I've discussed with many of my friends and even with my partner, because when he joined our family, he was like, gosh, your parents are really very different people. And he's like, I know why you are who you are because of them.
Right.
And I think it's the complete openness. And they never assume anything.
Right.
So they don't judge, they don't assume, and they let you be who you are. If this is what you want to share, that's what you want to share. I'm not going to go pry. If you want to tell me, you can tell me. And I think it was like an unspoken thing that just was in our house. Like, this is a safe space and whatever we discuss stays between us. And I'm not going to judge you. If you're going to tell me that you did something bad, you did something bad. That's fine. We make mistakes. Right. There was this instant forgiveness in our family. And we describe ourselves as the Italians of the North because we're quite a passionate family. We say how it is. And I think that's what people like about us. It's a directness. People, that might scare some people, right? They're like, oh God, she's going to speak her mind. But it also means that you'll always know what I mean. Mm-hmm. There'll never be like a mask in front of my face. They're like, oh, she's just playing this nice person. No, if I don't like something that you're doing, I'll tell you. And I'll tell you with love, but I will still tell you. And I'll make sure you understand the message. And I think having that openness, that instant forgiveness, the accepting nature of both of my parents made all of these people just open up because they were like, oh, cool. This is safe.
Do you remember the first time you shared something that you're afraid to share and you quickly learned you didn't need to be afraid?
Yes, I think I do. I must have been, I think I actually made someone else share something first. It was my sister. I remember it really well. I must have been, she had smoked her first cigarette. And so I must have been 12. She was 10. She was very young. And she, obviously, as kids do, like, oh, we found a cigarette and they tried it. And I remember her coming into my room and she was crying. She's like, I've done something terrible and I don't know how to tell our parents. And I was like, well, let's go and tell them together. So we stood there hand in hand and she told her story. And my parents were like,
oh, so cute.
Yeah, it was really cute. And they just were like, okay, well, why did you do that? And they didn't get angry. And I remember seeing that sort of almost as an outsider of their conversation. I was like, as long as you're honest about things, nobody's going to care what you did. They want to know why you did it. And they want to understand how you got to making this choice. But there is always room for, okay, well, let's try it a different way next time. Right? So forgiveness, I think, is the most important thing we need to learn as people, because you can get angry with someone. They might have hurt you. Yes. And that's horrible. But nobody benefits from staying angry. So the best thing you can do is ask them why. Why did you do that? Not that you did it. Why did you do it? You can have a conversation about that.
All right. Beautiful example. Mm-hmm. All right. So here we are. We have this rich background with our parents and our sister. And what did we think we wanted to be when we were growing up?
I wanted to be a princess. This was my goal. I honestly was convinced that I was royalty.
And why not with parents like this?
I was just like, no, I'm a princess. Like, I watched a lot of Disney movies, and that was the life for me. I just wanted
that was the life for me.
Honestly, this was it. This was my goal. I was like, yes, I want to wear ball gowns, tiaras. I want to find a prince, and that's my life. So I wasn't very commercially minded when you come, you know, right. I have no real career path in mind. But I've been on stage since I was 4, right? So I helped my mom in Peter Pan, and I sort of fell in love with the theater. I was always singing. I mean, there are videos of me in the cradle with music on and me just bobbing my body, right? So music has always been a part of my life. So I always knew that it was going to be something with music. So when I went to school and stuff, I was always up for the school plays and I was there for it.
I'm sorry, this is interesting too, because I see a difference, and I'm curious what you think, if there is a difference. Your grandmother did theater as an escape to vent, you know, emotions, both positive and negative, like you said.
My mother.
Your mother. I'm sorry. And because your grandparents' house that you grew up in, I apologize. Yeah,
that's all right.
But your passion for it seems to be different, because you didn't have that same need to escape. What do you think your passion for it was?
My passion was just telling stories. I didn't need to escape, because, you know, it was hard to express feelings, because that was a problem. But I liked exploring. This person makes this choice in a play, right? We have Cinderella who goes to the ball. Why does she want to go there? Right. Okay. She wants to meet a prince, but what else? What else is there? Because she can't get it, right? She's not allowed to go by her stepmother and her sisters. What does that do to a person? I've always been curious about how things feel. How does that feel? So whenever I've read a script or I've played a character, I've literally sat down on the couch and gone, why do they feel like that? And how does that feel? How would that make me feel? And I think being able to completely submerge yourself into another person's mind, body, skin, heart, that was really interesting for me. And I think because of the way how I grew up, I was able to do that because I had the freedom to do that. So even if I played a bad person, I had to find a way why they think what they're doing is great. Because if you think about it, a villain is not a villain in their heads. They're a hero, right? So finding that part of yourself, that was really interesting for me.
What's interesting, and I'm curious what you think about this, if this is accurate, because you didn't need to expend energy and resources to feel safe, like some people do, and why they chose different things to do in life, because you felt safe, you were able to dive deeper, quicker, and earlier in life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. I think having that safety, because I also knew that if I went too far or too deep, there was this safety net. I could lean into that and just be like, okay, I can just try things out. And it was having that safety of being able to just try and fail. Right? That's what acting is. It's trying and failing all the time. And then at some point you just got it and you're like, oh, okay. Oh, this is what it is. And that journey you get to know yourself really well, but it also makes you more aware of other people. Yeah. And most of my characters that I've ever played are definitely a part of me, but I've used other people to go, oh, you walk like that. This is how that character walks. Like, I know a lot of sitting on benches and just looking at people and how they walk, how they talk, how they stand. Like, those things are, they're so incredibly exciting to watch because it tells you so much about them.
Because your curiosity when you're younger never got snuffed.
No, that's still there. Like, I still do that. I'm always analyzing characters and finding characters in other people. And I think it's a really powerful tool to be able to do because it helps you navigate situations with other people.
All right. So here we are. We're in high school. We're getting ready to move on. What's next?
Well, high school was an interesting time, as I think it is for most people. I mean, you know, your hormones and insecurities. And I was, you know, a bit of a weird person in school, as other people described me.
Describe weird.
Yeah, that's why I'm still waiting for that description, because in my nothing is ever weird. Things are only ever curious or special, but never weird. But I was a theater girl, so I was always wearing bright colors, which I still do. I was wearing a lot of, like, I used to wear like a flower in my hair or whatever. And I used to get bullied for it so much because I wasn't fitting in. And I don't think I've ever fit in.
I'm so sorry I keep interrupting you. What do you think you weren't fitting in with? Because that to me looks like positive energy coming out. What were you fitting in with?
I didn't fit in with... I don't know how you would describe it, but I think so many people were struggling with who they were. And I've never struggled with that.
Right.
I've always known who I am as a person.
Right.
As in, obviously, you've changed through life, but in the basics, I've never changed, like, at all. So I think it was that confidence that people hated because they're like, you have something we can't have because of whatever was going on in their lives. And instead of celebrating that, we're going to put that down, which is something that, you know, teens do this. If you have something they don't have, they hate you for it. And I got bullied pretty severely because I was always singing and there were a lot of girls who wanted to go into musical theater, but, you know, weren't good enough or weren't confident enough to do that because you need to have a certain confidence to get up on a stage and to go listen to me, right? So I think they struggled so much with their own thing. And it also impacted me. Like, of course, like I was being called alien head, for example, because I have quite a high forehead and big blue eyes and I looked a bit different. I've been this tall, which is 5'8", by the way, since I was about 13. So I was quite lanky. So I get why they were just trying to find things. But I think the real thing that they were trying to say is, you are so confident, we can't have that because we're all struggling to find out who we are and you already know. And I think they couldn't deal with that. So because I was acting at the same time and because I had such a clear sense of who I was and the direction I wanted to take, it was very easy to just go, you know, just put it over my shoulder and not listen to it. Wow. So it didn't impact me that much. Like, I was bullied very, very badly. Like, I've had peanut butter smeared in my hair. I've had people call me names. I've had death threats, but I never did much with it. I mean, the death threat was sort of the brink of everything. It was like a last drop in the bucket. It's when I called my mom and she actually came to school. So I remember her coming in. She was wearing this green coat and she just went into the classroom. I was like, you need to learn to respect people. That you don't like my daughter is fine. The fact that you're wishing someone dead says so much about you. And people, that's when the bullying got even worse because, oh, I called my mom. But I was like, no, this person is there for me. Like, how many kids would call their mom, right? How many teenage kids to solve their problem? But I didn't see it as solving a problem. I just needed someone to tell this person to stop saying those horrible things. And I think so many kids were like, holy shit, my mom wouldn't do that. And my mom did. And to this day, I'm so freaking proud that my mom came in and did that for me because it showed me again in my teenage years that they always backed me. And that feeling of trust, I mean, we're talking about Forged by Trust here, but that feeling of trust makes you invincible.
It does. She made you feel so safe no matter what.
Yeah, really, no matter what. And when you look at acting or presenting or just being human,
Yeah.
That vulnerability, getting there, you need to have that sense of trust in order to get there.
That is why
the other way around.
That's why you are so phenomenally brave in all you do.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I was going to highlight as well, and I'll do it right now, you bring forward one of the greatest challenging dichotomies for success in life, and that is confidence with humility.
Yeah. Yes.
And when you can keep those two in balance, the world keeps opening up before you. And to do that requires bravery. And that's what you are exuding so phenomenally well.
Thank you.
So what was next? That's a powerful situation in life that you went through. What was next?
Yeah. Next was I moved to Amsterdam. So I, like I said, small town girl, and I couldn't wait to get out of there because I wanted to go to a place where nobody knew me. At this time, my sister got very famous, which was amazing. And I loved that for her, but I became the sister of, and I didn't like that. I wasn't my own person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get away from all of it. So I moved to Amsterdam, went to the FSA, which is the Frank Sanders Academy, which is a drama school. And I have to say that was some of the best years of my life.
What made them the best?
Yeah, because I again found this sense of safety, but with other people and for the first time alone, right? My whole life, I'd been sort of kept safe by my parents and I had them to fall back on. When you move 2 hours away, suddenly it's like, oh, I have to do everything alone. And I remember the first months I only lived on sausage and tomato soup. I didn't know, you know, I couldn't comprehend cooking for myself and it just was all very overwhelming. But I went to school every day, and drama school is interesting because how do you grade acting? How do you grade dancing? You can't do an A+ pirouette. You do a pirouette or you don't do a pirouette. Right. And I got to challenge myself. And in drama school, they ask you a lot of interesting questions. You know, you have to sing a song and then they do acting through song is one of the classes we had to take. And you sing the song and you think you've acted it really well, especially if it's like a really dramatic song. You're like, oh, well, well done. You know, tap on the shoulder. And then they start asking you questions and they go, well, why do you think this person is thinking this? And why do you think they have to say it right now? And you're like, and you start talking, and suddenly you have to go into this part of yourself that is so breakable that if you're like, if I share this with you right now, I'm never going to stop crying. And that happened a couple of times where you shared something and you're like, I think they think this because of this, because I have experienced this, or I can imagine experiencing this. And it breaks you because that little tiny heart of ours that is so very breakable, that sense of safety needs to be protected. So you need to learn the difference between private and personal safety. Personal safety is interesting, and that's where you can keep the lid on. Private safety is something you can only share with yourself and the people who are directly linked to you. So your parents, maybe your brother or sister and your partner. That's it. That's really it. Because those are the people that can help you to protect that. The rest of the people are too far away from you in order to do that. So asking those questions was interesting. And you learn to protect it while still showing it. But you have a little, not like a gate in front of it, but like just a very see-through curtain.
Like a film.
So that you can stand. They can still see you and they see what you mean, but you need to protect that part of yourself while still being able to share it. And we also had a class called BTC, which is all about movement and music. Not in dancing, but like they ask you to be gold, like do gold, do green. And you're like, what? I'm okay. And be purple. And you're like, okay. Which is very confronting because they make you do it in front of a mirror, which means if someone asks you do green and they turn on the music and you're like, yeah, okay, there is no right or wrong. So how do you do green? So I can only do green, what green means to me. So right. I'm thinking trees, plants. I'm thinking oxygen, because trees give us oxygen, where some people might think blue is oxygen, and you just start moving. But because I'd been bullied and because I'd always felt that my body wasn't great at moving and I had to do this in front of a mirror, I saw everything that was wrong, which again, that tiny heart of ours, that sense of security was completely breached. So, and you have people watching you whilst you do this. So that was pretty intense. And I think I cried every time. And then one day we did this class in this thing where it's called arm, head, arm. And you had to walk on a straight line. And then you had to either pull your arm out to one side, your head to another side, and then your arm again to another side. And you had to keep moving like that, almost like Vogue. That's very, very hard because humans are not meant to move that way, right? And watching yourself do that, criticizing yourself, I broke. Like, I think I cried for 3 days straight. Like, I couldn't eat, couldn't sleep. I broke. And when I stopped crying, my teacher went, he got the whole school together. So this was like 150 people. And he put on the music and he's like, now do it again. And I just looked at him like, are you crazy? He's like, I know you can do this. You need to know you can do this. So I stood on the line and I walked without crying and I did it. It wasn't perfect. It was never about it being perfect. It was about me looking me in the eye and going, we're going to do this. And that's the first time, this was 2.5 years into my training, where I felt I can trust me. I don't need anyone else. Obviously, it's nice, but I got that feeling that my parents have and have given to me. Now I can give it to myself. And that was the moment, I think, where I became me who I am today. And I, thanks to that really strange exercise. Yeah.
It wasn't that it was going to be something though. You were ready. You were primed so well.
Yeah. That it was beautiful. It really was.
Yeah. It sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
So what was next?
Next, I wanted more. So I, you know, did a couple of shows in Holland, which were very cool, but I felt that it could be better, frankly. Not to say that the Dutch actors aren't great, but I just felt that there was something better out there. And I wanted to reach more people. And the Netherlands is a tiny country with, you know, not that many people. And then I heard of the West End. And I remember when I was 14, I went to the UK and I said to my mom, this is where I'm going to live. This was my place. Like, London is for actors. It's for artistic people. So I signed up to the Guildford School of Acting. I was the youngest person ever.
What school? Say it again for me.
Guildford School of Acting.
Guildford. Okay, thank you.
CSA. And I was the youngest person ever to be able to be entered into the master program.
How old?
I was 20.
Okay.
So I started my master's at 20 in musical theater. And again, this was a year of learning. And I remember being quite homesick. I was very far away from home. I was in a different country. And I just remember sitting in the car of, you know, towards here. And I just remember thinking, what if I'm not funny in English? That was my main worry. And I wasn't funny in English for the first couple of months because I'd never spoken English. I had to learn that language here whilst doing my degree and making friends and doing all that stuff. So I was like, oh, this is hard. You know, I'd heard English and I spoke basic English, but speaking it and speaking it is, you know, those are two very different things. So I just was like, what if I'm not funny? What if I'm not funny? Because I identified as someone who made people smile. And I thought that had to do with laughter and fun. It doesn't. I make people smile all the time, not by being funny, but just by being me. And I had to learn that through not being able to communicate with words.
So what about you makes people smile?
I think, well, that's probably different for everyone. But I think I have a certain sense of I deserve to be here. And I know that I deserve to be here. And I think that makes people smile because it's a nice thing to be around someone who knows who they are. I think I'm a very grounded person and I know what I want to do. And people like being around that. They like, again, I'm very open. I'm very forgiving. I think I'm a safe haven for people to be around, no matter if we're just talking about the weather or if we're talking about, you know, life's big questions, which I don't have the answer to, by the way. I think it's that feeling of people going, oh, I can hold on to you for a bit and feel safe and feel powerful in my own way. I think that's interesting to people.
Absolutely. Keep going.
Yeah. So yeah, GSA was great. I learned a lot. And then I was asked to audition for Wicked, which is a big show in the UK.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Did all of that. And then I got very sick.
So tell me about Wicked for 1 second. What did you play in Wicked?
It was for Elphaba.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like the big green girl. It was very cool. And I remember going back to my first school in Amsterdam, and they got so excited. They were like, oh, you need to speak to all of our first years and they need to see how great you've become. And I'm like, well, that's not really what it's about.
Okay, so let's talk about this for 1 second before we hit the super challenge in your life.
Yes.
This is always phenomenal to me because there are a lot of people trying to do what you were successful in doing.
Yes.
And yes, it requires talent, requires skills, which you have, but a lot of people have that.
Yeah.
Why you? What made them want to select you for that position, do you think?
Because that was my part. And there was no way anybody was going to take that from me.
There's the confidence with the humility right there.
I mean, yeah, but in musical theater, there are so many girls who can do what I can do. Probably right. Better. But, well, no, not probably. I know they can do it better than me. But what they can't do is be me. And auditioning is a skill on its own. And the reason I got Wicked, we had audition training at school. And I was like, this guy directs Wicked. I need to impress this bloke. So I came in with a song from Wicked. And he went through my book. He's like, I don't want you to sing a song from Wicked. I'm not interested in that. And he went through the book. And then he saw Let It Go from Frozen. And he said to me, you do know you're not allowed to have songs in your repertoire that you can't sing. So I said, I know. And I just looked him dead in the face. And he's like, okay, well, then I want you to sing this. Mind you, I'd not prepared this song. I didn't know the song in English. I'd heard it once or twice. So I was like, oh, I'm royally, this is a problem. Because I just said I could do this. And the piano starts playing and it starts right in that big, loud.
Right.
Okay, I'm just gonna do this. And all I remember, I'm good at remembering lyrics, luckily. So I figured out the song is Let It Go. I'm just gonna say that word many times. So that's what I'm gonna do. And I sang it half in Dutch with an English accent, which then they didn't realize I wasn't singing in English. And I just figured play the part because I had to let go of so many things in order to be where I am today. That's what I'm singing about. And I did. And he was like, how old are you? And I said, I'm turning 21 in 2 days, because it was 2 days before my birthday. He's like, well, you're too young for Wicked. I was like, I don't care. I was like, I need this part. He's like, okay, but you can come in for auditions. And I did. And well, it went really well. So that was probably the moment I realized I was good enough for this job. And people say, well, you were good enough before that because you've done many cool parts. I'm like, yeah, but this was the part. This was the part where I was like, if once I get this, I can retire, because that's all I wanted to do. I remember seeing it the first time when I turned 16, and I cried so hard because I identified with this character so much.
Yeah.
She was not understood. She didn't fit in, but still she knew what she wanted out of life. And I was like, yes, yes, someone understands me. And playing that role was, I could be me in a character.
Yeah, wow. And that was
very powerful.
How long did you play it for?
Not very long. I mean, I played for a couple months because I was still going to school. I was still doing my master's.
Right.
So I was like doing my master's during the day, doing the show in the evening. So not very long, a couple of months, and did it in a dual capacity, but I got to do it. And that's all that matters.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So yeah. What was next?
Well, I had a stroke. So
how'd that happen?
Well, to this day, I couldn't tell you. They think it's got something to do with extreme exhaustion, which I wouldn't be surprised by. Because when you do what I did, you're basically being an athlete, but you're not looking after yourself. There's no time for food or drinking enough water. And there is no time to calm down, because I was still at an age where I had to learn that it wasn't my responsibility to take care of the audience all the way through. Right. There was this okay, they want to hear that money note. Right. The big,
right.
I need to do that every night because that's what they paid for. They didn't. They paid for the whole experience. And I had a whole cast doing that with me. But I felt it was my responsibility as the lead to do that. And I had to learn that you can't take on that kind of responsibility on your own. So I think the stress and the pressure that's on you when you're the youngest in your master program and the youngest doing this role, the pressure was on. And you're doing 8 shows a week. You're going to school. You're just exhausted. You're not sleeping. I moved back to the Netherlands.
If you don't mind sharing, what was that like having a stroke? Did you wake up with it? Were you paralyzed? Did someone find you? I mean, how'd that all happen? If you don't mind sharing.
No, I don't mind sharing at all. It's not a big secret. I remember waking up and I was about to go to work and I was blow drying my hair. And I do that upside down. Right. Where I know how to. And I whip my head forward. And I just remember hearing like a really weird sound in my head and like something broke. And I thought it was my neck because it got really warm. And then I came back up and my eye was droopy. And I was like, huh, strange. You don't think stroke when this happens. It doesn't hurt necessarily. And then I couldn't speak properly. So I was like, okay. Again, did not think of a stroke because I was 22 years old. Right. And then I went to A&E, and at A&E, I remember the nurse sitting at the desk and she looked up and she just didn't even take my name. She didn't say anything. She's like, she picked up this phone. Within 5 minutes, I was hooked up to all these machines. I was, you know, ridden into CT.
And so how'd you get there?
To the hospital.
Yeah.
At the time, I was with an ex-boyfriend and he helped me get there.
Okay.
So that's what we did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He's like, well, let's get you into A&E. This doesn't look right. We thought it was an eye problem. But then we thought, oh, maybe like a facial migraine or something. Like that, you come up with the weirdest diagnosis for yourself. Right. And I just remember the doctor after CT and everything, where they put this contrast in your veins, which makes you feel really strange. And I remember panicking, and over the intercom, they went, miss, just calm down. And I shouted really loud, you calm down. Because you've no idea what's going on and they don't tell you because they need to just action it. That's all they can do in that moment. Right. They can't stop to explain. So once everything calmed down a bit, the doctor came over to my bed and he was poking me in the face. Apparently, I don't know this because I can't see this part of my face. Like my left quadrant had fallen out completely. And I just remember my ex sitting in the corner and his face going, uh-oh. And I was like, what's going on? He's like, you don't feel that? And I was like, no. He's like, well, they're poking your face with a needle. And they do that to make sure you're not faking it. Apparently, you can fake a stroke. So the doctor's like, well, we think you had a TIA that developed into a stroke. We're going to monitor you now. So I got blood thinners. And within 24 hours, my eye was open. So it was completely back to normal. So they were like, cool, we have a chance of full recovery here. And what follows is months of rest. Months of why me, right? Because you start feeling very sorry for yourself, and months of what now? Because what are you going to do? Career over. There's no way I was ever going to get back on stage after that. So I started looking for different jobs, and I'd been a receptionist before, like during summers, you know, when there were no shows and when I was studying just to get by. So I started doing that, and I had to start from ground zero because I felt useless.
What? So up until this point, you've never experienced being a victim in a mindset?
No, I had no idea what that felt like.
And then, and you just said it, you hit the why me, which you hit the victim mindset. Mm. How'd you get yourself out of that? That's a real challenge.
Yeah. I am a very stubborn person. Very stubborn. And I was like, there's no way in hell that I'm going to feel sorry for myself the rest of my life. So I didn't care what I had to do. I was like, as long as I keep going forward, I don't need to make mega strides, which I'd done all my life. I'd always taken big leaps.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, right? But just small steps, one foot in front of the other. And I did. So I just remember being really worried what my life was going to look like, because I felt like I had no useful accreditations because I'd never done maths, not really. I, you know, was exempt from all of that stuff because I was doing shows as a kid. I'd never done any science or biology. Like I didn't do that. I did languages because I'm good at languages. That's about it. That's what I did in school. And I missed the last 2 years of high school because I didn't go to school because of the bullying. So I did my exams still, but it wasn't it wasn't a real thing. We call it the fun packet in Holland. You can choose which subjects you have. And I had none of the brainy things in there. So I was incredibly worried about what my life was going to turn out like. And I was like, I'm going to need to find a very rich husband. That was my plan. So safe to say, I left my ex. You know, I stayed at home in the Netherlands and just being looking after myself. I had an amazing group of friends that took care of me, and they helped me get back into ballet and jazz.
What did they do to take care of you?
They just listened. That's what they did. They listened, and they knew I didn't need someone telling me, oh, just get up and do it. I needed people to just listen. And they did. And they took me back to ballet classes, which was amazing because I loved doing that, but couldn't move properly after that. So they were so very patient with me. And they showed me that they still liked me, even if I was very vulnerable and very weak. Because that, you know, I always thought that they liked me because of who I am, you know, as a person. Oh, you're such a strong woman. Great. But do you also like the vulnerable part of me? And this is when I learned to show it and share it in a greater capacity with the world. And guess what? They liked it. So they stayed and we're still friends today. And they were absolutely wonderful in that time for me. And until I obviously decided to move back to the UK, because this felt like home. This was where I wanted to build up my life. And I think I also kind of wanted to get away from the Netherlands, where all that negativity had happened. Mm-hmm. So I went back. I got a job in finance. Don't ask me how. It was completely by mistake. Yeah, and I just started working my way up. But giving up was never an option, ever.
Wow. So yeah. What got us into storytelling?
Yeah, well, I saw all these people presenting, especially when I worked in finance and tech. I saw these people presenting and I just thought, this is so boring. And I don't see you. So I can't connect with you as a person, which means I can't connect with whatever you're trying to tell me. Right. And what you're trying to tell me is pure technical, right? People focus on the product or the numbers. And I'm like, I don't give a, you know, I don't give anything. Right. Hey, yeah, exactly. I was like, this is not interesting. What's interesting is why you're talking about this. Why aren't we talking about that? And I started thinking, and you know, I got involved with a well-being committee because I needed to do something, because they were just constantly talking about bonds and equity. And I was like, I don't understand what you're talking about, but this well-being committee seems interesting because I know about that stuff.
The what committee? Well-being?
A well-being committee.
Okay.
So it was part of a D&I thing that they were doing, and they had a parents committee and they had a well-being committee and whatever. And I decided to take over the well-being committee because being ex-musical theater, I knew a thing or two about taking care of yourself. How not to take care of yourself. And I saw all these people just sitting at their desk, looking at their screen. And they looked so unhappy. I was like, what are you doing? Like, oh, you know, I just survived this terrible thing. I was like, what's going on? So I wanted to break the taboo on mental health. That's actually where it started for me. I was like, well, let's start talking about this thing that we're all doing. We're all on this train that just keeps moving. And you guys have just accepted your faith, right?
Right.
And it doesn't need to be this train. It can be a different train if you want it to be. So I started talking about mental health. I started talking about lots of things that they'd never spoken about out loud. And I got noticed very quickly by the CEO of the company, by my manager, and like everybody in senior management. They're like, hey, you're different. I was like, yeah, it's not hard. Everybody here is the same, right? They were all just so unaware and they were just living and they weren't living, right?
Right.
They're like, you're good at explaining things. You're good at telling stories. How would you feel about doing that to clients? And I went, no, because I don't know anything about finance. And they're like, well, we can teach you about finance. We can't teach you to be you. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. So I studied for my investment management certificate, which is, you know, sort of economics 101.
Right.
I'm very mathematical. And I remember sitting there and I asked, what's a square root? Because I thought this was something they said in the Big Bang Theory to sound smart. I didn't understand it was a real thing. Because if you've never learned about it, you don't know, right? So I felt so stupid. And lots of people laughed at me. But they also liked that I asked those questions. Because they're like, holy shit, we don't understand how it works, but we're definitely not going to ask this question because that we look dumb. And I was like, I don't care if I look dumb. I need to do this test.
And you're also brave. You've always been brave.
Exactly. And I was like, I don't care. Like, I know who I am. So if you think I'm dumb, that's fine. And I think not caring about what other people think really helped in that. So they told me everything there was to know about the products that they sold. And I started talking to people and I started presenting. And that went really well. I got requested all the time to do all these really complex presentations that I didn't understand a single word of to this day. I can't tell you because I didn't care about that.
Right.
So I spoke about me, why I was there and why this was interesting to them. So we didn't discuss the numbers because I couldn't talk to them about the numbers.
Right.
I don't know the words that these people use.
You're demonstrating the epitome of you're not selling a product. You're always selling you.
To this day, can't tell you what they do. And my partner just still works there. Just terrible. And yeah, I just sold the story. I sold my why. I took them by the hand and took them on the story I wanted to tell. And I felt like we weren't doing that enough. So I tried the tech industry, tried the media industry. And then I decided I'm going to teach people to do that because not only does it make your listener feel great, it makes you feel great because you get to get up on a stage and share your truth. And that's so powerful, right? To be able to share how you look at life and your why, whatever that may be. That's so powerful to be able to get the time of day to share that. How often do you get to do that? Not very often.
Absolutely. So what are a few things that people can start doing to start preparing themselves to share that truth?
I think finding your vulnerability and sharing that. I mean,
that takes a lot of bravery. How does someone do that? So let's talk about that for a second. That's so brave. First, you got to be brave enough to find it. Then you got to be brave enough to share it.
Yeah.
What's the best way someone should start doing that, you think?
Getting out of your comfort zone. You have to get out. I know it's such a cliche, but you have to start doing things that you wouldn't normally do. And
Give an example of one.
Go bungee jumping. It's terrifying. But what will happen in that moment? Yeah. Once you jump off that cliff, your truest self will come out because it just overwhelms you, which means the emotions take over. And that's as true as you can be. And if you can share that with people, I don't mean screaming in front of an audience, but if you can share that openness of this is who I am, people will want to listen to what you have to say because not many people do that. So yeah, definitely go bungee jumping. It works. Or some people go to a improv class. That's terrifying. I to this day find that stuff terrifying. And I studied that. So yeah, it's whatever makes you feel uncomfortable and then be comfortable feeling uncomfortable.
That's beautiful. Anything else?
I would invite people to really ask the hard questions about their why. Like, why are you telling this? Oh, because I want to make the sale. Wrong answer. Why do people need to hear this? Start thinking about them, right? A lot of people get up on stage and they talk about what they think is right and what they think they're going to get out of it. Ask your audience. How often do you talk in front of an audience? And have you met with some of the people beforehand to go, what are you trying to get out of this session? Nobody does that. But if you don't know what people want from you, how can you prepare?
Right.
Then you're speaking your truth. Great. But that's a very arrogant way of thinking that they want to hear what you think you should share. Share what they want to hear. So what I do when I'm invited to speak anywhere, I go through the attendee list or I ask the organizer for the attendee list and I just pick 4 or 5 people and I just send them a friendly message like, hi, hey, you know, you have 4 to 5 people in the audience who are like, hey, a friendly face. But also you have some people in there who you know what they want, which is most likely what the rest of the audience is trying to get out of, right? So you can change your narrative and your thinking around that. So that also takes away a lot of nerves because most of the times you get up there, oh, what if they don't like it? Why aren't they taking notes? Oh, blah, 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 blah. All these thoughts, they disappear because you know that what you're saying is interesting to them because they've said that's what they want to hear. That's what I mean with when we talk about how to serve, like the title of this episode, I always say serve at the pleasure of the audience.
Right.
That's what you need to do. And that's all vulnerability. It's about asking them what they want and giving it to them. It is that simple.
It is.
It doesn't need to be that complicated.
Pascale, I could sit here and listen to you all day. You have such deep, beautiful life lessons. What are a few things that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you that you wanted to make sure you shared, if anything?
I want to invite people to just be more brave, because the worst thing that can happen is that you didn't do it. That's the worst thing that can happen.
That's a great invitation.
Yeah, like just do it. Like Nike says.
Right.
Do it and just try it. And even if it's just dipping your toe in the water, but invite yourself and allow yourself, right? It's allowing yourself to be that brave, to say, this is who I am, this is what I do, and this is what I'm here for. That is so incredibly important. And once you know the answers to those questions and you've really thought about them, share it. Share it with whoever wants to hear it. Don't put it on them. Don't pressure them to listen to you. Just share it and just be open for that and be more forgiving. Be nicer to each other.
Beautiful and perfect. Pascale, where can people go to bring you into their lives?
Yeah, well, many, many different ways. I think the best way is through LinkedIn. People can find me on Pascale Bergmans, and that's my name, or they can go to Prison Tales. That's, you know, also on LinkedIn, or they can go to www.prisontales.com.
All in the show notes, as always, everyone.
Of course.
Pascale, thank you so much for coming on, being brave, and sharing the most amazing life lessons you've been through and passed on to us. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Forged by Trust. Remember, if you want to forge trust, it's not how you make people feel about you that matters. It's how you make them feel about themselves. If you're interested in more information about how I can help you forge your own trust building, communication, and interpersonal strategies as your speaker, coach, a trusted advisor for you or your organization, please visit my website at www.peopleformula.com. I'm looking forward to sharing my next Forged by Trust episode with you next week when we do a deep dive into how to build a story with Dan Manning.